the earth and gone. Shot into space, cause she's a deleter, I'm a repeater. She's a deleter, now I'm gone, gone. Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Brian Wimpen coming to you live. It's just going to be me solo today. William's out in San Francisco. Got a meeting. He's imparting some brilliance out there, so hopefully he has a good trip. It's a pretty quick one, and he'll be back on Monday. We'll kill it then too. So, first of all, everybody, happy Friday. It was pointed out to me in pre-show that, one, I don't pay attention very often, and two, that the show is officially February 1st, 3 years old. I totally forgot about that. So we've been hitting this thing daily for 3 years. February 1st, 2010 was the very first show. So that is actually a fun thing to talk about. And so let's get to our guest here. Quickly, because first time on the show, I'm pretty interested to kind of hear what's going on in his world. So, John Reeves Whitaker, love three names. Welcome to Drive Through HR. First time on.
Thank you, Brian. And yeah, I get a lot of grief about that, but I don't normally use all three names. But you'd be surprised how many John Whitakers there are in the DFW area. So I've had to start pulling the Lee Harvey Oswald kind of thing and pulling out three names.
Dude, seriously, that's like the HOV lane or the express lane to being a serial killer. Three names.
Yeah.
That's easy. I mean, seriously, that's like, oh, yeah, three names. Woo. Yeah. So do you go by Wit?
I do go by Wit.
Right on. Well, that's what I'm going to call you because we're officially tight now. You've been on Drive Through HR. That's just part of the rules. So
sweet, and I know I get brownie points for pointing out the anniversary date pre-show, so I'm going to take a little credit for that too.
Big time! No, that's so funny. I just we're chapters past that, which it's hilarious. I hadn't even thought about that. So need to give a little prop to the heritage, so to speak. That was way back when I really did not have a clue. So, and I'm so far past that. That's so 2010. So, well, hey, man, if you would introduce yourself, and then we'll kind of roll into what's going on in your world.
Good enough. I'm John Whitaker. I am located here in Dallas-Fort Worth area. I live in a suburb called South Lake, which we jokingly refer to as Pleasantville, and I do not lie. But I've been, I guess, the founder of this HR hardball movement is what I'm calling it, because it's a little bit more than just a business model. It's more of an attitude than anything else, and I've been trying to brand this for the last couple of years simply based on, you know, my own personal experiences in HR and also what I think will lead us to what is hopefully a more strategic, involved human resources in the future. I think a lot of that comes from my background. I was originally in sales operations, sales management. This is way back in the late 80s, early 90s, back when if you wanted to make a phone call, you had to pull over and put a quarter in a Pac Bell phone. That's how long ago that was.
Damn.
But, yeah, I had a pager. That was like the biggest goal of my life, was to get a pager. That way I had made it. I had become a sales trainer if I had a pager.
A two-way pager or a one-way pager?
Oh, it was one-way. I know.
Ah.
No, I wasn't dealing crack, Brian. I was gonna say
that's a little trailer, but we have different we have different opinions. That was like a big deal. Skytel, to get a two-way Skytel was like you were all money back in the day.
My kids don't understand what a payphone is. It's kind of funny, but I was in sales for a couple of reputable sales type turn and burn companies, Gallo and Fuji, and got into pharmaceutical a little bit, and then took a risk on a entrepreneurial venture when I was in my late 20s, and for whatever it lacked in income and, you know, structure and those types of things, I spent 3 years running a little staffing company in Fort Worth, Texas, called, and this is not, I'm not mumbling here, it was called Rent a Frog, because it was all based on hiring the local students here, the Horn Frogs, instead of, you know, normal professional temp agency. We structured our whole model around using college students, which was a heck of a lot of fun, taught me a whole lot about operations side, also made me realize that, you know, I was not necessarily cut out to be an outside salesperson out there pounding the pavement. I have all the respect in the world for those folks, but it wasn't me. And anyway, I kind of, that combination of experience led to my, I was at Alcon Laboratories for about 11 years in an internal HR business partner role. And most of my work there was dealing with sales and marketing organizations. I expanded within those client groups, but that was where my experience to that point really gave me a little bit of different perspective at the time. I think now it's more common for people without any HR, previous HR experience maybe, or without a life, you know, they're not HR lifers, perhaps they get into these roles, which I think is great because that outside experience certainly gives you a different perspective. But that was when this started percolating, this HR hardball. And I found that the higher I went up the ladder, it was unfortunate. The HR leadership at the very top started having their finger firmly planted on the chicken shit button. And I found that to be very, very disturbing. You know, you have a lot of really talented people in human resources, and it seems like they're at the lower levels before they've gotten comfortable. And it just became something that I noticed everywhere I went. So came up with, I guess, sort of the tagline, HR Hardball, to try to impress upon the people who are at HR business partner levels, whether it's director, manager, whatever you are, to, you know, push that envelope. And if you have to push it up within your own organization, do so. But I think that human resources can have a huge impact if the leadership at the top is playing ball. And if they're not, then the people underneath them really need to challenge them and push them.
So I'm curious. So how exactly do you build a business model? Love it, by the way. One of my favorite kind of blogs, one of my favorite people in kind of the in our kind of HR echo chamber here is Jay Coons out of All Children's in St. Pete. Is No Excuses HR?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anything he writes, I will, without question, consume it. I just think his the attitude and his approach and what he's actually done, you know, actions that he's taken and team he's built and what they do there is really just, you know, inspiring the way that I think it should be, in my opinion. So kind of back to my half question that I almost asked was, how exactly do you take an attitude and start to frame that up to where you start helping people and you make it into a business model, and it's, you know, how does that work?
You know what, that is a hell of a segue, because I think it kind of ties in. I know what you generally ask people to is what is sort of top of mind, what's keeping them up at night and stuff like that, and I think it ties perfectly into what's been bugging me lately, which is this whole setting goals, personal goals. And for a lot of us, me included, you have these, you know, goals that you have, but they're given to you. You know, either we're working for somebody and you know what your quota is, you know what you have to perform. We have goals that are given to us our entire lives. You know what grades you need to make, you know how much money you need to make, you know what you need for a credit score, any number of things. But I think what happens is an offshoot, and this is just something I'm coming to terms with too, is we suppress some of these bigger ideas, and we don't necessarily try those things that we're passionate about. We do the things that are next in line. You kind of take those incremental steps, and I was very much doing that like everybody else and you know, doing well. It wasn't like, you know, things were falling apart around me and I had to do something quick. It actually, strangely enough, came out of a conversation I was having with a person I respect a lot. Her name's Emily Bennington. She's a writer and speaker who, you know, does a lot of the, you know, women's rights and, you know, we're going to rule the world type thing, which I find highly entertaining and highly educational as well, because I grew up with brothers and stuff. So I'm a pig, like probably you are, Brian, but I digress. We were talking about this is a couple of years back, we were talking about, well, what are you going to do? You know, what, how are you going to get this attitude across or whatever? It's like, and I think she mentioned at the point, she's like, well, did you just say you should play hardball with them? And I said, well, yeah, that's, you know, you got to play hardball with them. And that's when it just sort of clicked to me that, you know what, it's not necessarily, now I'm not a big marketing machine or anything like that. What I can do, though, is I can either one-off go into companies that have an existing structure and work with their HR leadership on things that they might be doing differently or that they can communicate differently and why they are entitled to have an opinion. I can do it that way. I do a lot of writing, and I'm hoping to have my first book published by the end of this year, but, you know, I'm knocking on wood firmly right now. I do a lot of writing, do some speaking, and I'm just trying to, I guess, for me, the key was just finding something that I was passionate about. And that from that, anything, any number of opportunities opened up because I was doing something I like, I guess is the point.
Well, how, that's just, it's really, I mean, it's just an interesting conversation. I actually did a speaking, spoke to a group last night, which I haven't done as much of that lately, and I was talking about kind of, they wanted me to talk around skill gapping, which is skill gaps and some of those things, which is probably not one of the topics I get overly passionate about. So I kind of retrofitted around my normal kind of what I like to talk about, which is kind of innovation and pushing through kind of individual, organizational, and institutional fear. And at the end of the day, it was so funny. It was interesting because the person who had set it up, who's a senior HR leader for a fairly big company, came up afterwards, and she literally was like, so what I got from all that you said is that the HR practitioners or the HR professionals are the problem. And you know, ultimately, that's not what I was saying, but ultimately, I think what's interesting is because of the minutia of kind of where HR is at and some of the HR role, which is a lot about, you know, being the conscience of the organization, because you're looking at policy, right? That's pretty black and white. And so that part of it puts you in an interesting role. And so what I told her was, I said, at times HR, you know, the HR function tends to be the enabler. Because you're playing kind of the in-between of what should be done, what needs to be done, you know, not to mention your personal kind of beliefs and biases. I mean, you're pushing through and leadership, and you're balancing a lot of things. I mean, that's why HR professionals are so freaking talented. It's not an easy role. You don't be phoning that in. I mean, it's tough.
It's not, and, you know, and I think you know, to give you an example of kind of what I'm talking about, and I'm sure you've seen this as well, is the cliche, you know, seat at the table, and how I think that's sort of dated, way dated. You know, HR wants a seat at the table. They want a seat at the table. And I don't know if they actually know why they want it, other than, well, you know, that's where all the grown-ups are sitting. And so we want to be there too. And I was actually, you know, fortunate enough to be real close to that table at one place I was working, so I was watching the person in front of me prepare for this, you know, one of the big strat plan meetings, and to see what was prepared was so uninspiring that it was crushing. It was like, this is, you know, it's like seizing the opportunity. It's not necessarily, I mean, you can't change corporate dynamics overnight and make it to where HR's one of the main players. Not every company is going to have a CHRO. They're just not. But I think that the individuals who are in those roles, whether they're managers or directors, your work with your specific client groups and the advice and direction you're giving your leadership, they'll make roles for you. They'll start listening to you more. You just have to take advantage of those opportunities. And it's, you know, I think that maybe it's job market now. It makes people a little bit more cautious. I think that, you know, maybe just comfort level. I'm a big believer that comfort is a killer. You know, fear is a hell of a motivator. If you have something to say and you're in a meeting, figure out how to say it without, you know, being offensive. but figure out a way to say it in front of the audience that needs to hear it, and don't necessarily, you know, don't be concerned with, wow, if I say that, they're really going to be mad, or they're not going to, you know, they're going to get rid of me. You know, those types of things, I know they run through people's minds. And I think in HR especially, because we don't have a product other than who we are, I think we tend to hedge our bets sometimes.
Yeah, no, and that's a quick, let me do a quick reset here. So, hey, everybody listening to Drive Through HR. We are the daily show that talks about human resources with the human resource community and those that are in it. We're on with John Whitaker. And, you know, one of the things that I think is that actually came out of last night in talking to the meeting is I'd given him some takeaway tips of how to change the dynamic of how you look at engagement and how you look at really understanding and just changing up how leadership views the workforce. One of the things that I'd shared with them, and it was really interesting, it was a really good, it was a small group, and it was there were great questions, they're probably on average probably 15 years, you know, 13 to 15 years of experience, HR experience from everybody in the room. So it was a pretty seasoned, you know, pretty strong group as far as
tough crowd.
A lot of experience, right?
Yeah.
It was. And so it was good because I talk a lot about, you know, just the effects of technology, right, and the evolution of big technology companies and how that affects kind of dovetails in, you know, pop culture dictates a lot of and parallels a lot of what happens in workforce management and, you know, just HR in general. And it's kind of my whole little shtick. And so we were talking, and I talked about just the little things, how to go very granular with changing behaviors. Because a lot of times, you know, when you're managing change, you know, ripping the Band-Aid off is one thing communication-wise, but then starting to wade people into changing behaviors is a huge other deal. And usually when you try and get people 0 to 100, you know, that rarely ever works out very well.
Right.
So I was just talking about, you know, just as easy as have people do a list of 10 things that they feel they are really spectacular at, work, professional, whatever. Just get that from everybody in your company and just see, and then be able to talk about, like, well, that's really interesting. And it's really just one of those super easy, you know, take people out of kind of what they're thinking about. Here's 10 things that I think I'm really, really good at. Right?
Yeah.
That's one of those
fantastic idea.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good conversation piece. It doesn't cost you a lot of money. You know, I mean, just put it on a paper. It doesn't need to use technology, and it gives you good talking points that you might be able to have a lunch. I mean, everybody should do that. In the entire company, all of a sudden, you now have made, you've actually made human capital and human resources. Now you've taken it, and you've got a bunch of people. People actually having conversations. And I think that's probably our biggest, one of the biggest gaps is how to kind of get the people back in the equation for everybody to where it is a little more personal and you're not shuffling numbers. Because that's probably, like I said, there's so much talent in the HR community. It's just trying to figure out how to navigate and give talking points and how to get comfortable with kind of forcing conversations. Because there's a lot of people that want to change. I mean, we talk to them every single day, right, at all different levels. And that's probably one of the biggest frustrations is I've got a lot of ideas. I know a lot of great people. I see a lot of other companies doing great things. But, you know, I'm at 150% capacity, right? I can't get everything done today. So how do I prioritize the have-tos and start integrating in some of the ideas that I want to do to leadership? And then back
you know,
it up.
It's funny,
you know.
Brian, you mentioned that. And yesterday, we were at the final installation of a series of talks we've been given to a group of people about, you know, quantum leap in your performance and things like that. And the topic comes up about these what CEOs really want out of their companies. And so we have a survey, 400 CEOs, all, you know, nonprofit, profit. Here are the 10 things, or the most important 10 things any company can have. And number one on every list was resilience. Number two on every list was creativity and innovation. Now, when the flip side is, you said, okay, what are you being given on the most regular basis at your company? What are you guys good at? Last on the list in every one of them, creativity and innovation. And so that gap between what they consider, and this is the top of the chain, what they consider most important and what they feel they're good at as a company, I think that's an opportunity that, and not just HR professionals, but because we do talk to so many different pieces of the organization, and because I think that, you know, the ideas and the way you can utilize technology and utilize people, for that matter, I mean, it's immense. I think that we have our opportunity there, and it comes with innovation, doing things, you know, do something crazy, do something different, do something that's going to help, and then make sure they know about it. And I think that that came out real clear in the statistics we were referencing. And the other side of that, which is a little bit, I don't know, a little bit sad, but obviously or also not surprising, we worked over the course of 4 weeks, 1 hour a week, to try to get people to pick one major goal that you want to accomplish, something, and we call it an aiming point. And this is going to be your goal, and you're going to strive to it. And by the end of the 4 weeks, and we're only spending an hour a week with them, we get them in a group, we only had about 40% of the people could actually establish a personal reach goal. Like, you know, it has to be a stretch goal, but only 40% of the people could really come up with one. And I think that, you know, a lot of that is we don't maybe know, you know, past next week or tomorrow or, you know, a month from now what it is we really want to do. And I think that that carries over to our professional lives too, because we're so busy putting out fires, chasing the transactions that we have to do, and doing the work of 1.5 or 2 people sometimes because of the way companies are structured now. I don't know that we're giving ourselves the opportunity to come up with that next great idea. And it's the opportunity to be rewarded for it is there. So what you're saying is really, I think it's really interesting, because you do the conversations, that's where it starts.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those, I mean, that's one of those things that, I mean, it's no different than kind of basic sales training, is a lot of times people just have to be comfortable with how to navigate the talking points. That's probably one of the biggest fails in sales training and conflict resolution, is just giving people the talking reference points and go back and forth about, okay, when this happens or when that happens, just here's the way to very naturally navigate it till you get comfortable, right? So you can anticipate a little bit of, if they say this, then, you know, here's a way to kind of diffuse that, or here's a way to move with the conversation. I mean, it's comfort in conversation. Because walking in, most people do not want to walk into a senior leader and have conversations when they know that it's going to be difficult. I mean, that's just not the natural state of the majority of people, especially when, like you said, you know, your product is really a process, right? HR is really, you know, your product is the process. The more smooth the process, the more you can tweak that, the more efficient. And that process is now how you're going to be graded, you're going to be performance managed, you're going to be, you know, that's what you've hung your hat on, is that is one of the best processes that we have in the company. And so it's really difficult. There's a lot of intangibles with that. So quick question, what would be one or two things that, I mean this is your kind of your wheelhouse, you could actually give people talking points to get that conversation started and continue it for them to think about in HR?
Man, you know what? I would encourage anybody who's never read anything about Socratic method. Socrates had a real simple philosophy on this. If you're in those conversations, you find yourself in those conversations, basically you're asking questions, you're not leading, you know, you're exhausting every question you can, and go get used to, you know, using it. Like you said, I mean, you made a real good analogy, sales training. I mean, you really are, when you get those opportunities, you are in many ways in a consultative selling approach. And if you have those you have those opportunities, you need to ask questions about things that matter to them, not you. And obviously, if they're senior leader in the organization, knowing something about the business and the goals for that next year will really help you in that endeavor. And once you get them talking about something they like, you can ask as many questions as you like, and they'll probably do 80% of the talking. I think that's one thing that you can definitely do. And then the other is just, you know, we used to call it embedding or whatever you want to call it nowadays. But I would, if you're an internal, working for a company, you're in an internal corporate HR role, I would really push to get an assignment where you're, and this might require a little extra time on your part, but just to, you know, walk in the shoes, do the moccasin thing with somebody who's in a line management role in a function that you don't necessarily work with, but get that experience at an operational level or out in the field, work with their sales team, go out and make calls and do that type of, do something that puts you so far out of your comfort zone as far as what you're experiencing and what your perspective is going to be, that it'll bring so much credibility to you as a professional. And then on a personal level, I think it'll just help you be that much better as an HR person. And, you know, and you're building your own internal resume too. So it's not completely altruistic. It certainly should help you. And, you know, networking with people like this on this show and on these blogs and getting in these chat rooms, I think it's fantastic. I mean, the opportunities that we have to bounce ideas off one another is just fantastic. And I appreciate the opportunity today to get to wrap with you guys.
Well, and of course, great conversation. It's one of those things that, like I shared with everybody last night, at the end of the day, to have any change in the outcomes, you've got to change something in your process and your routine, right? That's the thing.
Right.
You can't show up. You can't think about it the same way. Something has to change that ultimately might be a little bit uncomfortable and might have risk associated with that to get a different outcome. And, you know, you just got to allocate the time where something takes a back seat. And this is for everybody. I mean, this is every single day. If I want to have better outcomes on a project, or there's something extra I want to do, or it's a volunteer thing, or, you know, I want to run a better time for something I'm training for, I can't do exactly the same thing that I, you know, the same way that I train every single time, the same thing I eat. I mean, there has to be a change, because it's, you know, the outcome fairy is not going to come sprinkle outcome dust on me and all of a sudden it be better.
Is there an outcome fairy?
There is. And it's in DFW. It's actually more Addison is where their outcome fairies are based. But
I think I've seen those guys.
You need to connect up. It's Mercy Wine Bar. That's where you can find them a lot of times. but anyway, whole other story, but love the outcome fairies. So, hey, man, we're quickest 30 minutes you're ever going to have in your life is Drive Through HR. We're almost out of time, and I want to make sure, where can people connect with you? Maybe where are some places you're going to be? And then we're done, and we're on the weekend, brother.
Well, I'm a Twitter boy, so you can always find me HR_hardball. And hrhardball.com. I try to write a blog a couple, three times a week. I'm terrible about keeping up with it, but love to hear from anybody. And I'm also available by email at wit@hrhardball.com.
Right on. Wit, good conversation. Can't wait to be down in DFW. You know, I'm down there quite a bit. Can't wait to hang out in person. Sounds good. Everybody, make sure... Everybody listen up. Make sure you have a fantastic weekend, and we will talk to everybody on Monday. We're out of here.
Out.
Some cats, they know how to fight. Some cats run. I'm 1,000 generations ahead of them. All my suits are Calvin Klein.